VOA News, I'm Tommy McNeil. U.S. President Donald Trump says that Russia has got to get out of Venezuela following the recent arrival of Russian military personnel in the country. All options are open, he told several times. And when they questioned him on Wednesday about whether or not the United States would be willing to put boots on the ground to remove the Russians, Mr. Trump added that Moscow is well aware of the U.S. stance. Local and regional reactions are mixed over the recent U.S. decision to recognize Israel's sovereignty over the Golan Heights. Some say the move raises tensions between the Israel and Arab neighbors, while others contend the move does not change the reality on the ground. The U.S. is the first country to recognize Golan as Israeli territory. The rest of the international community considers it Israeli occupied. President Donald Trump said keeping the Golan Heights under Israeli control is of critical strategic and security importance to the state of Israel and that region. The top U.S. commander on the Korean Peninsula says that he does not see signs that North Korea is moving toward denuclearizing. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani.
At last summer's Singapore summit, a joint U.S.-North Korea statement said the regime committed to working toward denuclearization. Since then, it's become clear the two nations disagree on just what that means.
Their activity that we've observed is inconsistent with denuclearization.
General Robert Abrams, when asked if there's been any recent change in the North's production of nuclear weapons and material and missiles, Abrams told a House panel he's seen little or no change in North Korea's broader military capability, which he said remains a threat to the U.S., South Korea, and other allies. Sagar Magani at the White House.
This is VOA News. British Prime Minister Theresa May decided to ante up with her own job on Wednesday to get finalized a deal on Brexit. We get more from Reuters' Lucy Fielder.
British Prime Minister Theresa May has promised to resign if her twice-defeated Brexit deal gets through Parliament. It's a last throw of the dice to pull rebels in her party into line. And it's not clear yet if it'll be enough for those who don't want her at the helm of the Brexit process anymore. Her hope is that they'll be lured by both that promise and their fears Brexit is sliding out of reach. At stake is the treaty governing Britain's divorce from the EU, which May spent 2.5 years negotiating with Brussels.
Mr. Speaker, the House has spoken.
In January, Parliament voted it down by the most crushing margin in modern British history.
I profoundly regret.
And another defeat this month was almost as bad. May wants Parliament to vote on it again this week. She badly needs support from Brexiteers in her own party.
That's Reuters' Lucy Fielder reporting. Local authorities and international aid agencies struggling to deal with the massive destruction and displacement left behind by Cyclone Idai in Mozambique are facing a new crisis. That's cholera. Senior health officials said that 5 cases of the waterborne disease have been discovered in a neighborhood of the coastal city of Beira, which sustained the most damage from the storm. It tore across Mozambique, Malawi, and Zimbabwe late last week. That storm damaged the city's infrastructure, including its water supply and the sanitation system. Boeing says it is close to completing a software upgrade to the anti-stall system on its 737 MAX jets, which is suspected to be responsible for 2 recent deadly crashes. A federal judge has dealt a setback to U.S. President Trump and his administration and the rule that low-income people on Medicaid are required to work. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
The work requirement is blocked in 2 states, Arkansas and Kentucky. Both want able-bodied adults who get health insurance through Medicaid expansion to go to work, go to school, or volunteer. Advocates for the poor have sued. They say that Medicaid is a health care program, not the place to mandate people going to work. The judge didn't address that issue, but did say the laws are arbitrary and capricious because they don't address obstacles for getting medical coverage to the needy. He's ordered the Federal Department of Health and Human Services to come up with a new proposal. Jackie Quinn, Washington.
Find more at voanews.com. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Bunganyi in Washington, and today is Thursday, March the 28th, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you. The government of Burundi has released the three schoolgirls who were detained last week over accusations that they had scribbled or doodled in their textbooks over the photo of their country's president, Pierre Nkurunziza.
From the very beginning, we launched a hashtag, Free Our Girls. The hashtag has been trending globally. It's been picked up globally. Human Rights Watch, on the other hand, also wrote about this and launched a campaign asking people, where people all over the world doodled over the photographs of the head of state and in an attempt to show the government that doodling is not a crime.
Keti Nidyabandi is a Burundian human rights activist currently living in exile in Canada. The Second World Health Organization's Africa Health Forum kicked off this week in Cape Verde with a focus on how to provide universal health care to the people on the continent. And members of the opposition in Tanzania are accusing the government of President Magufuli and his ruling CCM party, Chama cha Mapinduzi, for using underhanded methods of repression against other opposition parties.
Just today, we were supposed to have an internal party meeting in one of the suburbs of Dar es Salaam, and the police invaded our meeting and disrupted it. And later, we went to the party headquarters, and police invaded the party headquarters and asked us to stop doing a constitutional meeting of the party.
That is Mr. Zitto Kabwe, the head of Alliance for Change and Transparency, ACT Wazalendo. We'll speak to him later on in the show. We are covering those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. And we start off in Burundi, where the government has released three schoolgirls who were detained last week over accusations that they had scribbled or doodled in their textbooks over the photo of the country's president, Pierre Nkurunziza. The girls were arrested last week and transferred to a jail in Ngozi, about 50 kilometers from their school district. The news of their arrest caught the attention of the international community, many denouncing the rationale behind their arrest. A social media campaign, hashtag Free Our Girls, trended on Twitter and other social media platforms, with thousands of people around the world calling for their release. And now that the girls have been released, many are now questioning whether the government of Burundi bowed to social media pressure or that they realized the absurdity of this whole situation. And one of the activists responsible for bringing this issue to the attention of the global social media community is Keti Nivyabandi. She's a human rights activist from Burundi, currently living in exile in Canada. Keti joins me on the line to talk about the human rights situation in her country. So, Keti, thank you very much for joining us. Can you give us a little context of why these girls were arrested in the first place? And is there a specific law that they broke or that prevents them from drawing in their textbooks?
Well, what we know is that the girls, so initially it was a group of seven school children, one boy and six girls, and they were arrested for doodling in their textbooks over the photographs of President Nkurunziza. So the seven children were arrested, and the four were released because they were under the age of incarceration, and they were under 15. And the three other remaining girls, 15, 16, and 17, were then charged with offense to the head of state. The full charge is a lengthy one, but it includes the fact that they are a threat to national security. And so they were then moved to a different jail, a different detention center, this time to a jail in Ngozi, which is at least 50 kilometers away from their hometown and their families. And that's the president's hometown.
So some people find it peculiar or strange that these kids were arrested for doodling in their textbooks. But like you said, I guess the question really is, why do academic textbooks in Burundi contain photos of the president? That sounds like some communist era type of education system. Can you tell us what's going on here?
So I have not seen the textbook myself, but indeed there are several questions that need to be asked about around this matter. Number one, indeed, why do we have textbooks which feature the president in it, and what kind of text are they, which are accompanying these photos? So this is quite problematic. Secondly, for these kids to be arrested, it means that their teachers, the school directors, the headmaster, headmistress, and several other people were involved and reported these kids to the police. So this also tells you a lot about the state of the climate that's in the country, and the fact that there's a great climate of fear and of, you know, almost spying and telling on each other to the authorities. And lastly, you have the fact that you have an entire the national police coming into a school to arrest school children for doodles. I mean, it doesn't get any more absurd than this. But it tells you this is the state of Burundi today, and it reflects the dictatorship that really we are under, and the gravity of the situation, but also how broken our justice system is, and how human rights abuses are carried out by those who should be upholding the law.
So the girls were released. Do you think that the release, their release, had to do with the government bowing to international pressure, especially the social media campaign, or the government just realized the silliness of this whole situation?
It was absolutely the power of people power, and particularly the power of social media. From the very beginning, we launched a hashtag, Free Our Girls. The hashtag has been trending globally. It's been picked up globally. Human Rights Watch, on the other hand, also wrote about this and launched a campaign asking people, where people all over the world doodled over the photographs of the head of state, and in an attempt to show the government that doodling is not a crime. So you had a global outcry over this, and absolutely, I'm very 100% sure that the government responded to the public oppression, the public humiliation that it was getting. I've just landed from Geneva, where I was at the Geneva Summit for Human Rights and Democracy, and I had asked also people to share the hashtag there, and there was a government representative in the room, and here you had people from all over the world using this and trending. I think it was very embarrassing for the government of Burundi to be seen in such a light, and this is the only reason why they released the girls.
So let me ask you this, aside from the social media campaign, what is, do you think, is the reason why the arrest of these girls captured the attention of the world, given that the other there are other numerous human rights abuses documented by organizations like Human Rights Watch and other international bodies like the UN, you know, regarding the poor human rights record of the government in Burundi? Why this issue, and what else should the world know about what is taking place in your country?
I think what captured the attention of the world is the absurdity of this act. You know, really, to jail children for doodling in their textbooks, it doesn't get any more absurd, any more ridiculous than this. And it doesn't, and it's the best illustration of how low this government has fallen. So I think the world over, just people couldn't conceive, people who live in democracies or semi-democratic states just couldn't conceive that a whole government would be able to put children in jail over this. But what the world needs to understand, and particularly our African brothers and sisters, is that this is just, it is one out of thousands and thousands and thousands of human rights abuses that the Burundians are undergoing today. And yes, there's the doodling, but there are so many people losing their lives.
Keti Nivjabandi is a human rights activist from Burundi. She's currently living in Canada, where she joined me on the phone. This is Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. A leading opposition figure in Tanzania is accusing the government of President Magufuli and his ruling party, the CCM, or Chama Cha Mapinduzi, They're accusing the president and his party for using underhanded methods of repression against opposition parties. Mr. Zito Kabwe is the head of Alliance for Change and Transparency, ACT Wazalendo. He says that some of the methods include harassment, arrests, and detention of prominent political figures. Earlier this year, the country's parliament passed a law that gave powers to a government-appointed registrar of political parties. That registrar has powers to deregister parties and to punish people that he finds guilty of engaging in what it calls unauthorized civic education. And such activities include, but are not limited to, holding meetings, voter registration drives, etc. And Mr. Zito's party recently received notice demanding for audited reports, a move that Mr. Zito says is a pretext to go after his political party, especially after a high-level defection of veteran politician Malim Seif Harim Ahmad from his former party, the Civic United Front, CUF, to join Mr. Zito's Alliance for Change and Transparency. Mr. Zito joins me on the phone from Dar es Salaam to talk about this situation.
What is happening is that 2 days ago, the government issued a notice on the intention to cancel registration of our party and gave two reasons. One is related to audits and the other one is related to the actions of the so-called members of the party in various parts of the country who banned the flags of another political party. And both reasons, both grounds, are very, very flimsy. Because, one, the audit issue was settled 3 years ago. And the second one, on the banning of the flags of other parties, first of all, the law is very clear that if there is that banning, it has to be the people, the members who were involved are supposed to be punished and not the party that is supposed to be punished.
Okay. So given that the issue of audit, which I believe this is probably the bigger issue here, you're saying that it was settled 3 years ago. Why now? What prompted this move by...
That's the most important question. Why now? Why now? It is because a week ago, our party received the biggest boost ever because the leading politicians in the other side of the United Republic of Tanzania, the place called Zanzibar, joined our party en masse. And in a week, the party registered 125,000 members. Mm. So the state is worried. The state is shaking, and they are trying to threaten us in order to ensure that we do not build the momentum of the new members that we got from Zanzibar and some other parts of the United Republic of Tanzania.
Okay, so this is the ruling party seeing you gaining a lot of membership, a lot of traction. Yes. With this new member. I believe that name is Saif Sharif Ahmad, who just joined.
Sharif Ahmad.
A very influential.
Winning every single election in the Zanzibar archipelago, and every single election has been stolen, and the last election was cancelled.
So you believe that this is what prompted the government of Magufuli, President Magufuli, to come after your party?
I believe so, but also should not be seen in isolation. For the last 3 years, there has been a shrinking civic space and political space in the country. The political parties were banned to conduct their political activities. The leaders of the opposition, members of parliament, have been in jail. Myself, I've been arrested more than four times. And just recently, two members of parliament, one of them the leader of the opposition in parliament, spent more than 100 days in jail. So there has been this kind of suppression and oppression and shrinking political space in the country. So it has to be seen, not in isolation,
right,
but in news.
So. Right, to see a full picture of what is happening in Tanzania, where
yes,
analysts are saying that there's been a campaign of repression against opposition parties like yours.
Yes.
Do you know of any political parties that are being currently audited by this body?
No, all political parties are audited by the Auditor General every year. And so the issue of audit hasn't been an issue at all. It is not even an issue now.
Mm.
They just decided to use it in order to serve their purpose of threatening us. So all other political parties are being audited, and maybe end of this week, the Auditor General will issue his report on the audit, not only of the political parties, but also of other government agencies.
Okay, so since you're sure that you will pass the audit, then that won't be a problem.
The audit has been done. It was done 3 years ago, and we passed. We received a clean audit report.
And
so
that
there is no issue at all in the audit.
Okay.
Not at all.
And so this has been communicated with the relevant authorities.
And it was because it's the National Audit Office that audits the party.
Now.
And we communicated with the Office of Registrar of Political Parties and sent to him all the auditor reports. So there is no issue, but they are trying to find a way of deregistering the party because of the overwhelming support the party has received in the last few weeks.
Mr. Zitto Kabwe is the head of Tanzania's opposition party, Alliance for Change and Transparency, also known as ACT Wazalendo. Environmental activists say that as the global demand for products like wood, paper and many other goods, as that demand continues to rise, people and companies are encroaching ever deeper into Africa's dwindling forests. From Uganda, reporter Mugume Davis Rwakarinji brings us this report about conservationists in the country who say that both animals and forests continue to face human threat.
The sound of birds and chimpanzees welcome you as you enter Chevale Forest National Park of Western Uganda. The rainforest is home to a variety of flora and fauna. Big mammals such as elephants, buffaloes, antelopes, birds and reptiles live here. Godfrey Bariasima, the park's head warden, says the forest has 13 different primate species, some only found in Uganda.
We have black and white colobus. We have the gray-cheeked manga bee, Ugandan manga bee, because they found it very unique. And then we have lohest. A lohest monkey is a terrestrial monkey. It doesn't stay up in the trees, just on the ground. And it is also there. And we have a blue monkey, a velvet monkey, and the olive baboon.
But he says this park is commonly famous for the chimpanzees, which scientists claim have more than 97% of man's DNA. Guide Alex Tudiatunga says indeed, chimps behave like humans in a way.
So they can tell each call of their own. So they've had a friend. If it is an enemy group, there is a way they also become nervous. Sometimes they can go to attack or they just retreat.
But these animals face challenges mainly resulting from the human interference, such as poaching, says Lile Ajelova, the head of Ugandan Tourism Board. Besides poaching, many forests, home for the wildlife, have been cut, leaving animals with less space to live in and not enough food to feed on.
In Uganda, but I don't believe it is just in Uganda, but it's all over Africa. It's the biggest problem. Why? Because wildlife has lost a lot of their habitat, and there's a lot of interface between humans and wildlife right now. And I would say it's the biggest challenge for wildlife conservation.
She says animals that face more threats are those outside protected areas like national parks and game reserves, as protection is usually left with local authorities who have less expertise and resources. At Vigodi Village, just about 4 kilometers from Chivale National Park, John Tinker has set a home in which he accommodates tourists, local and foreign.
Without wildlife, I wouldn't have this business here. It's because of wildlife that tourists come in this community, see chimps and the other primates in the forest, and then they need a place to stay. And most of, and some of them now are taking interest in staying in communities. And the money I get here is around 10 million Uganda shillings a month, and that helps me to run the family. In fact, I don't even manage it. It's managed by my wife and kids.
56-year-old Tinka was in fact born in what is now Chebala National Park, and his family used to survive mainly from hunting. Animals and plants that live in the world contribute to the ecological, genetic, social, economic, scientific, educational, cultural and recreational aspects of human being and sustainable development. Ajelova says people need to be informed of these benefits so they can help in protecting the world.
Strategies like community tourism or ecotourism would be a better, you know, way of getting everybody to benefit socially, economically, and environmentally.
The government is also giving some incentives, like startup capital, for people living near national parks so they can keep watch of the wildlife. For VOA News, Ayamugume, Davis Rwakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
And we end this morning's show in Cape Verde, where the second World Health Organization's Health Forum kicked off this week. The focus is how to provide universal health care to people on the continent. The World Health Organization's Africa Acting Director for Health Systems and Services Cluster, Prosper Tumusime, spoke to Ricky Shryok about progress that has been made since the last conference, continued challenges, and more.
There has been quite a lot of movement. There has been, from the side of the WHO that supports the countries, we've had a program called the UHC Flagship that works through sending out scoping missions to countries. And so far we've visited about 10 countries. What we do is that we go and sit down with the countries and the stakeholders, with the partners and government departments, and discuss their priorities for the health sector, and then agree on what out of those could be actually rolled out to improve the coverage for universal health.
As I understand it, at the conference, there's a innovation, a challenge exhibition. Have you gotten a chance to visit it? And if so, did you see anything that inspired you?
Yes, there's a universal challenge here. So there are some, for example, that use their technology for information, gathering information that is taken from clients and so on to aid the service delivery as they move on. There are quite a number of them. There are others which are on financing and the sort. So it's quite a good amount. And these are mainly youth, the young guys, the young people.
What are the main challenges to implementing universal health care in Africa? And Africa is a huge region, so I'm sure there are different challenges based on different spots.
No, that's correct. There are different challenges because the countries differ. There are different types of countries. We have countries that are in the federal state. We have countries that have a lot of fragile situations. We have small countries which are like island countries that have peculiar challenges with climate change and things like that. Then we do have, of course, also countries, for example, that are moving up from the lower income to the middle upper income countries, and they still have challenges of financing despite they have moved up a step higher as they get divorced from access to donor funding, for example. But one of the biggest challenges, I think, is galvanizing the government commitments.
And that's it for this Thursday, March the 28th edition of Daybreak Africa. We want to thank you for spending this morning with us, and join us again tomorrow for more Africa news and features right here on the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.